Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Welcome back to Circles of Change. It's a real pleasure, as always, to crawl across the country. We like to bring on authors hither and non. So I'd like to welcome to the show Mr. Ken Lloyd. Ken, how are you this morning? Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Well, we're going to go kind of on an edge in a funny way because Ken's book is going to catch a lot of attention. By the way, let me introduce him briefly. He's a nationally recognized newspaper columnist, author, speaker, and frequent television and talk show guest from Southern California. He's a former management consultant, helping clients primarily solve the broad range of people problems that seem to permeate our workplaces. And Ken is currently vice president of planning and development at Strategic Partners Incorporated. Author of several books, including Jerks at Work and the book Performance Appraisals and Phrases for Dummies. Ken has taught numerous MBA classes and given lectures at UCLA and other universities. He's a member of the American Psychological Association and the Society for Industrial and Organizational Psychology. Ken graduated from UC Berkeley and received his master's and PhD in organizational behavior from UCLA. And our topic today is his latest book, Office Idiots, What to Do When Your Workplace is a Jerk Place. And I got to tell you, Ken, when the introduction of your book came across my screen, I said, this is one I got to grab. So I imagine you're having fun on tour right now.
Oh, definitely. Lots of fun. Everyone works with people. It can be a little tricky, and everyone has their own story about the office idiots they're working with right now.
Exactly. I mean, you look at, of course, the Dilbert comic strip that basically was fueled by people continuing to give Scott Adams insights to what was going on in the workplace. I think, you know, did it ever occur to you that you were going to be called the ultimate expert on jerks at work?
Frightening, isn't it?
I mean, I don't think that was one that you told a career advisor when you were picking your college program.
No, a little scary there. You know, you think, well, gee, you know, tennis players write about tennis, attorneys write about the law. Who writes about jerks? A little scary.
Yeah, that's truly. And so is that because you survived so many of them, or you worked through your own issues, particularly being in the psychological field here, right?
Yeah, hopefully it's just being a good observer and trying to help people, you know, really enjoy their jobs more and deal with some of the crazy things that go on with coworkers and bosses and customers, you name it.
Yeah, exactly. And so, Ken, really, how was it that you ended up amassing all the data that really informs your book? Because I want to alert our listeners, this is not an anecdotally driven book whatsoever, although you've got some really great anecdotes in it, but it's really quantitative and qualitative data-based.
Yeah, it's interesting. About 16, 17 years ago, I started writing a workplace advice column. And a lot of the questions that came in were focused on people-related issues, which is my specialty. But gradually, the questions that came in dealt more and more and more with workplace behaviors that were so inappropriate, so over the top, so off the wall, and creating so many difficulties, mm-hmm. that gradually the column kind of morphed into a clearinghouse where people write in about problems that they're having with people at work, and that's just kind of where all this data came from.
So you've become the Hints for Heloise of or Ann Landers in a different place. Well, you know, and I did take note for our listeners, again, go out to jerksatwork.com, and on your website you've got a list that goes from A to Y, A being absenteeism and tardiness, all the way down to Y is yelling. Indeed, and since my name is Zara, you really do need to add a Z. And so I was thinking you might do something about people who sleep at work, you know, with the letter ZZZ across it.
I like that. That's really great.
You know, those of us that come at the end of the alphabet, just like us redheads, we hate being outdone by blondes and everybody else who comes before us. So at any rate, but your collection of then indeed every single one of these segments, there isn't a topic that doesn't seem to come up that involves something that's off that edge.
Yeah, it's interesting. If you think about workplaces right now, here we are, we're at the end of the week, over the weekend, there are still people working right now, and people are experiencing all sorts of difficult situations because of the people that they're working with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in his, over the years, and again, 16 to 17 years ago, have you watched the trends of what the preponderance of difficulties are all about, or is this kind of timeless, ageless, stageless, the kind of things you've encountered that you've coached people through?
Well, that's such a good question. I mean, some, if you will, behaviors of the workplace really are timeless, and we see all sorts of communication-related issues that just go on dealing directly with people problems at work. Others are more new. For example, 10 years ago, I didn't really have any issues or questions coming in regarding email or technology. Okay. And now there's a whole new arena of workplace idiots that are really email idiots. And we've all experienced one facet or another of this same type of idiocy.
And you don't, in this case, let's be real careful. When you say email idiots, you're not saying people who don't know how to do email in positions just cringe to know this data is sitting there potentially to be pulled in some hostile work environment case.
Well, it's so interesting because with email, people think, well, what does email really stand for? Electronic mail. But when I do training in this area, I say, no, it stands for evidence mail. What you're putting in an email is evidence. It's going to be out there forever for anyone to look at. An email is never the place for arguments or disagreements or emotions. You really need to pick up the phone or even pick up your feet and deal with those kinds of issues. Email is great for facts, figures, documentation, but not when it starts to get into some of the more subtleties of human interaction.
And, you know, did you, again, vis-a-vis your columns, Ken, kind of see this slippery slope then revealing itself?
Yeah, started, as email became more and more popular, more and more email came in to me about problems that they're dealing with coworkers and others at work directly related to the email process. You've seen these long strings of emails that go on. You scroll down and down and down and down and down, and people are fighting over email. They'll fight over email with someone who's literally across the hall, and the problem could be resolved so easily just by talking with the person. Email is very limited. There's no nonverbal aspect in email, and about 80% of the message that we send to people is nonverbal.
Well, I think the other piece of it, since you worked for so many years as a consultant helping organizations cope with challenges going on in the people space, some of that is manifestation, though, of the company culture, where there might be fear or underlying hesitation to tell someone the truth, so you hide behind the electronic version, particularly when you see people doing reply alls, right? Or even the long strings because they want to make sure they're covering themselves for the next step that they're trying to get done.
Oh, sure. There's all that covering what they've done. They're certainly trying to dodge and blame and deflect through email. And then you've got this whole area of virtual bullies. You've got people out there sending emails that are real tough and nasty and mean. And they don't really act that way when they go face to face with someone. This is just a way for them to throw up a shield and be tough. It's totally inappropriate.
But the other side of it, though, we have to be careful because there are times I've gotten email when it's in all caps. And so you assume it comes across like they're yelling at you or that it's in very large font, only to find out that the person has a vision disorder and that's the only way they can type or they can communicate. So it's always good to know the story behind the screen here.
Oh, absolutely. And that's where email is missing. That story that you're talking about doesn't really get told. I mean, recently I sent an email, just to show you, sent an email telling an individual that I resent the information, resent the information that they had sent to me. And I got a phone call. Why did you resent what I sent you? And it's the same word, R-E-S-E-N-T. Is it resent or resent? I don't resent anything.
That's
so
right.
It happens. And this is just a problem. And you have to be extremely careful in the email process. But it's just fertile ground for office idiocy.
Isn't that true? We're speaking with Ken Lloyd, and his new book is Office Idiots, What to Do When Your Workplace is a Jerk Place. Just a quick departure. I mentioned the introduction, Ken, of course, that you wrote one of the Four Dummies books. That must have been quite an experience. Performance appraisals and phrases for dummies?
Yeah, it was just such an interesting experience, particularly in light of the interest that the publisher had in providing managers and people who are doing evaluations with real tools in terms of what to say. How do I put in writing how this individual is doing? And half the book, literally, is phrases. Here are things to say if a person is doing an excellent or a fair or a poor job in just a cross-section of performance areas at work. So I ended up writing, you know, literally thousands of these phrases, and it was actually great fun to write once you kind of get into the cycle of it. Very interesting.
Yeah, interesting. Well, and as well, this new book, then, Office Idiots, has a sense of being a tool as well. I commend you for that, that this isn't one that's just intended to either make us laugh or ignite or incite us, but also to help us, I would say, not just cope or work around, but certainly for leaders that pick up this book, you know, we own a responsibility as leaders to help the people that are coping with things that indeed may be surfacing as idiocy, because it certainly is affecting the entire team and can be a latent cancer that's going to get you in the performance category.
Well, you're so right. And if you let these kinds of behaviors go on, guess what? They're not going to get better. They're only going to get worse. And my hope was not only to provide kind of an overall framework on what to do, but in many cases, literally get down to consider saying this in this or that situation, and then throwing in some quotes, not for a person to go and memorize it, but to give them an idea of here's what you would not only do, but say in a situation if you're dealing with this or that type of problematic person.
You know, you had one segment that really caught my attention was this concept of power-tripping office idiots. Why don't you share that chapter with our listeners?
Well, that's interesting because power players come in so many different ways. You can have a coworker, an employee, and certainly a manager who is playing this game with you and always trying to be right, to dominate, to influence and control you. And they'll do all sorts of things, from something as benign to nicknaming people. And that's a power thing. Who gets to bestow the nicknames? Well, the person allegedly who has more power or wants to show it. All the way out to people who absolutely insist on having the last word, or they have to be right, and they stop listening. They're so focused on dominating and controlling and overpowering others that function and performance and effectiveness at work just goes totally out the window. And by the way, sexual harassers, which are still out there, mm-hmm. are clearly nothing more than playing power and dominance over others based on gender. 100% not only inappropriate, but illegal. But that's part of the power play that goes on.
And so some of the techniques that you offer listeners, maybe you can share with us from your perspective. So I've got someone who's like that, whether it be a peer on the work team or my boss or another superior, what to do?
Yeah, it's interesting. Ideally, you want to first deal with that individual directly. Mm-hmm. In a lot of these areas, if you don't take assertive action, it is going to continue and it is going to get worse. And this doesn't mean aggressive action. Aggressiveness, assertiveness are very different. Assertiveness is really just standing up for what's right, for fair, what you really deserve and have merited in the workplace. So it would be to deal directly and focus not on the person's personality, yeah. not labeling, hey, you know, you're a bully or you're just awful. Focus on behavior, focus on performance, focus on what this individual is actually doing. It's far less likely to generate a defensive response by focusing on those behaviors and the impact they're having on you, and then what you'd like to be done about it.
And most certainly, though, doing that in a private setting, right, as opposed to a group setting, because that could rally some other kind of reaction.
Oh, my gosh. All of absolutely the whole arena of office idiocy of doing things in public, particularly when people argue or reprimand, you know, when managers want to discipline an employee in front of others. I mean, that's a power play among other things. It's terrible. So privacy is absolutely critical on this.
And I think what I have found when I've confronted someone who was in a power play situation, that actually when I got with them one-on-one, I didn't even see those behaviors come out at all. So it was very awkward for me to suggest to this person, did you realize when we were in that meeting and you did this, that it prompted me to respond such and such? And this person looked at me like, what are you talking about? I don't do that. So how do we help that kind of situation? Do we have to get more than one person trying to help him understand, it happened to have been him, that he does that?
Yeah, that's a great question. Sometimes these people are just in denial,
yeah.
and they're not aware of it. Sometimes when you focus on this, and you kind of stay away from using the word you. If I say, you yeah. did this, you did that, it instantly prompts a defensive response. As opposed to saying, you know, in the meeting, here's what I heard. I heard these, and you go through what you heard, and then say, and here's how it impacted me. If you want to figure out kind of a way to get that person to engage, an interesting question to ask is, what would you say to your manager if this had happened to you?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And kind of draw them into it so you're not criticizing, you're not generating all this defensiveness, you're relating what happened and drawing them into the solution more than the problem itself.
Very well put. We're speaking with Ken Lloyd, and his new book is Office Idiots, What to Do When Your Workplace is a Jerk Place. And you can learn more about Ken's other books, which he's written a multitude of them. I commend you for that, and that's at jerksatwork.com. Ken, you know, look at what's played out in the workforce, certainly in the last 5 years in particular, since the economic downturn. Of course, the Gallup poll comes out every year talking about employee attitudes and the like. And I tell you, it's getting more and more distressing in terms of, I think the latest data showed that 70% of people are not engaged at work and that actually 20% are disengaged. So I have to imagine, you know, there probably is no better time for your book, but perhaps some of this idiocy really is a reflection of all the other things that are still not right in the system in terms of people's response.
Well, I think that's really a very insightful look at this. And what's gone on in organizations, especially when times were particularly tough, although certainly not out of the woods, is that as companies reduced employment, people are having more and more work to get done. So in other words, it was simply getting the same amount done with fewer people, which means people are going to be a lot busier carrying out their jobs. At the same time, the rewards, psychological, economic, and other, really weren't there. So people do start to feel frazzled and abused and overused and ignored. And that's right. I mean, that's exactly coming from what's happening in the overall system. Then you just add some of the crazy, quirky things that people do at work in the first place, and it's a formula for a real sense of disengagement for a lot of employees.
But, you know, I think we go back to this. I mean, one hand, we say there's this real personal accountability. I have to step up and change my attitudes or what I do from the inside out. But the other piece of it is, for those of us that are around others, that we still hold an accountability to try to nip this in the bud. Because like you said, if you don't address it, it's just going to continue. And by the way, it might become the status quo within your work team, such that everybody now starts, you name it, swearing, yelling, it's okay to show up late, multitask rudely in front of other people. So, again, I don't know that this is a book you just necessarily should hand out or leave quietly on the desk of someone who's a problem employee, but also read it and know, okay, what could my role be in helping stem this situation?
Sure, and it even goes right along that line to thinking, am I enabling this?
There you
go.
Talk more about that. Talk more.
Are my actions somehow encouraging and even rewarding a person who's engaging in these really, if you will, idiotic behaviors?
And so the rewarding piece would be what? I would laugh or joke about somebody who did something like that, and that would reinforce it?
There you go. Laugh, you joke, you make light of it, or you simply tolerate it. You mentioned, if a person's using profanity and somehow go along with it, they're going to think, hey, it's okay. With you if you're doing it, so I'm just going to keep doing more. People repeat rewarded behavior.
I would say in that category, some people then believe it's expected for me to use profanity.
Yeah,
and thus they jump on. Yeah.
Yeah, all of a sudden, is that part of that organizational culture and climate that's acceptable here? And in fact, if I don't really do it, maybe I'm going to look more like an outsider.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, we've created a monster here and we've fed the thing.
So in your consulting days, of course, Ken, you would step in and help leaders try to stem the tide of this type of a behavior, I assume, amongst other things. And if you look back on the portfolio of clients you've served, and then obviously now you're probably practicing all the right things now being a leader within the Strategic Partners organization, is there one thing that works better than another in terms of kind of stemming this stuff in the you know, clipping it? Is it, you know, step one, surround yourself with other colleagues who can help you take a stronger stand, et cetera?
I think there are a number of steps we can take. I mean, a lot of it really comes down, if you really want to cut way back to the basic, you say, am I really working and dealing with others and managing while abiding by the golden rule?
Oh,
which sounds so corny, but if you really think about it, am I dealing with people at work the way I want to be dealt with? And then you build from there. We talk about treating people with respect and trust and being an active listener and communicating and focus on learning and development and staying current with what's going on in our work and in technology. But at the very core of it, a lot of it comes back down to really treating people as we'd like to be treated.
Yes, and in fact, I know I've helped some employees who I actually think the idiocy behind them was so many complex things going on in both their work life and their personal life. And I recall one gentleman I sat down and have and navigated through a feedback session very directly, and I started the conversation by saying, okay, this is what we heard from you. He says, yep, that's it. I said, tell me, if your spouse was sitting in the room here, or your son, what would you be saying to me right now? And what you found out very quickly is that indeed this was a behavior set that this person, for the most part, manifested at work, but not at home. And not until I could help him see that, you know, that kind of Jekyll and Hyde didn't serve either sides of his life well, did we get a chance to stem the tide.
That's just great. What that does is it gives them a real shake. It shocks them into thinking about what their behavior is looking like in a totally different framework, and they go, oh my goodness. You know, what if, it's just what you're saying, what if this all had been taped? Someone took out a cell phone, right, and they now have all this, and they're going to put it on YouTube. How are you going to feel about that? Oh my gosh.
Which has happened, by the way, of course, and people have lost their jobs and very difficult. But, you know, it comes around that you have to recognize that.
Yeah, it's a question to ask. As you're looking at your own behavior, you're thinking, just ask yourself, is this something that I would like to see on YouTube tonight with, you know, 740,000 hits on it?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so.
That goes back to our opening comments about the sensitivity around email. At least I know my training early on was to be very mindful that anything you put in an email, are you prepared for it to end up on the front page of the New York Times?
Absolutely.
And
right.
That's just a metaphor for saying in your boss's inbox or your close friend's inbox that we come to. Well, Ken, the book's been out now for a period of months. Again, our book is Office Idiots, What to Do When Your Workplace is a Jerk Place. What kind of surprises have you gotten so far in terms of it being out and about?
Well, it's interesting. One of the more focused surprises is the way people are reacting to this whole multitasking issue that's come out. Because you kind of alluded to it earlier when you talked about the rudeness of it, but so many people are told, you know, it's important to multitask. Time management programs talk about multitasking. But in reality, yes, we can multitask in the sense that if you want to do a couple of low-level chores at once, you know, you can talk on the phone and hold a vacuum, and, you know, you're pretty much, if you're talking to a friend, not even having an intellectual conversation. Our brains are not wired to do simultaneous high-level intellectual tasks. We can switch gears real fast mentally. You know, it can be on one and then another, but we can't do both. So that's why being in a meeting, for example, and someone's sitting on their computer and allegedly talking to you while working on something important on that computer, guess what? It's not happening. And people think, but multitasking is so important as a time saver. You have to really pick the tasks carefully. You can't do simultaneous tasks at the same time that are high level. And that also means driving and texting.
Exactly, which recent data shows that it causes the same effect as actually drunk driving. So
yeah.
It's a pretty frightening thing that we put ourselves in harm way, as well as anyone else who's in the car or anyone who is in the same direction. Well, Ken, continue to have fun with this. You know, again, you're now being inside a company working on some of the workplace issues from the inside out. Does it feel different than having been a consultant on the outside in?
Sure. The best part of it is that as an, if you will, internal consultant, when you do projects and make changes, you're really there throughout the lifetime to continue fine-tuning and tweaking and adusting. A lot of times in consulting, you'll go in and perform an engagement, and then you kind of go on, almost like, you know, the old Long Ranger who'd leave the silver bullet and be gone.
Go ride them tonto, yes.
This, from the internal standpoint, really gives a lot more continuity and far more, as I say it, impact on the organization.
Yeah, that's right. Ken, how do you think you've changed the most by helping individuals and organizations change? How has this body of work impacted you?
I have never been asked that question. That is such a good question. I think it's as we go through life, as you will, we're always learning. And I think it's in looking at all of these behaviors, it's not only helped me understand more about work and workplace and people, but understand myself. And think, you know, where could this be coming from? How is it that people would be doing this? So I don't I don't react in a knee-jerk way, but I think it's helped me observe even more carefully, listen and look. I think if you will manage with all of my senses, which is something to really think about it. We're in organizations and dealing with people. What do we see? What do we hear? What do we feel? What do we smell? You can literally sense fear or even disengagement in an organization by walking through it. So I think it's helped me heighten my senses, all of my senses, in dealing with the workplace and even dealing with the world at large.
Yeah, and I think I call that more I get a sense of the weather. You know, you can get a sense and a sense of the tempo and also recognize what kind of weather you bring into the room as well. That I think many people who would be in this office jerk category probably don't know to realize what ill will or, you know, negative vibes they bring with them.
Oh, it's so funny because some people, when their name shows up on a caller ID when the phone rings.
Yeah.
People are automatically predisposed, oh no, it's that person, here we go. And that expectation fuels the fire even more. And again, here the person hasn't even said anything yet, but because of the individual's prior behaviors, they're setting a negative tone, or if you will, a negative aura, just by being there.
So let's assume that your book now is going to get in the hands of people that really need it in terms of reshaping their own behavior. I think what you're saying, though, is that might be one of the biggest challenges is the reputation that precedes them. And so how to humbly step into this, probably look for people who can positively support you, and then don't you maybe have to first start by asking forgiveness?
Yeah, I would even go before the forgiveness and really be open and receptive to some real feedback. And truly listen to it. It's very easy. Someone says something, we can come up with all these reasons and explanations and all that. But wait a minute, just step back. Let's really listen and ask yourself, you know, is this really how I want to be acting? And is this really an accurate portrayal? And then, you know, there may be a time certainly to apologize. And more importantly, you know, apologies are fine, but they don't mean anything if we don't take action to deal with behavior that would have caused the apology.
That's exactly
right. Apology is not like a wild card. I get to do something awful and apologize and do more awful. Apology means I'm sorry, I apologize, I feel badly, and I'm not going to do it again.
You betcha.
That's
it. Ken, thank you so much for joining us again. The book, Office Idiots, go to jerksatwork.com. Have a great afternoon, Ken.
You too. Thanks a million.
You betcha. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.